yay. Hi.
Hi. I know I said it kind of funny this time. We're back.
We're back.
Instead of we're back or however I normally say it. I'm not sure.
Okay. Whatever you normally do.
Normally? Yeah.
Normally?
Normally. All right. You want to hear what I got for you on the disturbing front today? Because this disturbing fact is probably going to be a mildly long conversation.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay.
I'm scared.
Okay. I'm talking to you today, which I'm going to give you some background, which is just what I was doing. I had a moment of like, I need to actually background on a little bit of this.
Okay.
So you know how like I search on stuff online, like just morbid shit?
Yeah.
Right. Basically. I wouldn't be me if I didn't.
Right.
Yeah. So I stumbled across this company and they're called Harridan Vodka.
Ooh.
And Harridan is a noun. And on their website, I'm reading, this is all from their website.
Okay.
It says, a bossy and or belligerent old woman is what that means, which I like. And their story is just that they're from New York, right? Upstate New York, family owned, operated, whole nine.
Nice.
Good shit.
Like it.
Yeah, me too. I like it a lot. Some of their values, they're feminist. They're inclusive. They care about collective well-being, which I really like about them.
So what so far is disturbing?
Oh, I'm getting there.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Other than that, it goes against the norms of society for today. But...
Oh, I'm getting there. Okay. Don't you worry. So they have these two lines of vodka, right? These two reserves.
Mm-hmm.
Both of which are called the Paranormal Reserve.
Ooh, like it.
So the official Paranormal Reserve is from last year, from 2023.
So last year...
I think it's from 2023. Crap. I think. Anyway, if it's not, I apologize. The other one is for sure from last year, which I'll get to that one in a minute.
Okay.
So the original Paranormal Reserve, it says it's a collection of 666 bottles. 666.
Uh-huh, got it.
And they were rested in the Occult Museum. You know what the Occult Museum is, right?
Mm-hmm.
At in Lorraine's Museum.
Yeah.
And though the museum is closed to the public now,
mm-hmm.
they, like, open it up for their reserve to be in there.
So, like, just to take it in there and reserve it?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, it's crazy because of all the shit in there. Like, the skulls that they use in black magic rituals. Who's in there, Mom?
Annabelle.
Annabelle's in there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all of that's happening. And... each bottle that you buy of this wine, or I'm sorry, this vodka, not wine,
mm-hmm.
comes with gloves for handling and protection. And protection, Mom.
Uh-huh.
Protection of the vodka.
Protection from the vodka?
I don't know if
protect
it's,
the vodka?
Probably,
or
yes.
Or is it that high proof that it burns you?
Maybe because it's the spirits.
Right? No pun intended.
An authenticity card, a bespoke wooden case, and... part of this case, the lid of it, is a Ouija board, and it comes with a planchette. Isn't that crazy?
It is. I don't like Ouija boards.
Look at it.
Oh, that's really fucking cool looking.
Yeah. And then the second one is the hotel edition,
mm-hmm.
which is the 2023 edition.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Which is sold out.
Ugh.
But just the hotel. I think the other one's still available. Maybe we could get a bottle.
Okay, I want to see
for $300.
Can I see it?
This is the hotel bottle.
What kind of case does it come in?
We're getting there.
Sorry.
Yes. They're really cool. I was like super excited when I stumbled across this. I was like, oh, people who think like me.
Nice.
I like it.
Me too.
So it says that these were rested for 1 month in two of America's most haunted hotels. The Anderson Hotel in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
Okay.
And
neither of which have I heard of. So now we need to... remember those.
It says that they include, obviously, their 88 proof vodkas. I didn't see that before.
The first one was 44.
Are we sure?
Yeah, it said 44 proof. 44% alcohol by volume, it said.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see that now. I didn't look at that before. This one's 88 proof.
That's a lot. It's a lot of proofs.
It's a lot of proofs. The case is carved by a woodworker from New York.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Exclusive hotel accessories for the bottle's corresponding location, a keychain, pen, and a hotel pad, gloves, and an authenticity card. But then they give a brief description about both hotels.
Okay.
In this.
Do tell. Do tell.
So the Crescent Hotel, it says from their website, built in 1886, the Crescent Hotel is often billed as America's most haunted hotel. It was originally built as a resort for the wealthy, but eventually became home to a school for girls, mostly famous, and an experimental cancer hospital run by Norman Baker. At least 40 people died at the Crescent during the years in which it functioned as a hospital, and it is home to at least 5 identifiable ghosts.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that sounds pretty creepy. I've never heard of it, but
yeah, we might have to do a little deeper dive into it.
Yeah. I would like to hear more than what you just read.
Right.
It's intriguing.
Yes.
It has sparked my interest.
And the Anderson Hotel, again, from their website, built in 1930s on the site of its predecessor, the Central Hotel, which burnt down around the turn of the 19th century. The Anderson Hotel has a grisly history. At least 13 deaths have occurred on the premise from 1965 until the late 80s, when it closed its doors as a hotel. It has had such violent paranormal activity that it was closed to investigators after a cameraman on paranormal lockdown was mysteriously bitten by an unidentified entity.
Holy crap.
So we're going to do that one too.
Yeah.
And they like hey, let's reserve some vodka in there. Let's let some age.
Yeah, I like it.
That's pretty crazy.
It is. I wonder what this one's year is going to be.
This year's one. Yeah, I don't know. But I feel like we should probably get a bottle, except for I don't necessarily want to play with the Ouija board. But no. It's cool that it comes with it, but I'm not going to play with it. All right, Mama. Tell me about this case that you've been working on like it's nobody's business.
I have been working on this for a long time and not like, because I was working on it and then
She even read a book.
Yeah.
I feel like I say that every time you read a book.
Oh my God, I read a book. But yeah, I started working on this a while back and then like I pulled away from it because I was doing other things and I knew it was going to take me forever. And then when you pull back, then it really takes you forever. So here we are, part one. And I'm hoping, I know it's going to be at least 2 parts, but I'm hoping that it's not going to be 3 parts. But I guess we'll see how that shakes out.
Let's go.
Okay. Betty Lou Beats is who this story is about.
I have to ask you because of the way I labeled this. Is it Beats Like the Root or Beats Like Ba-dum-tsh?
Beats Like the Root.
Okay.
It's B-E-E-T-S.
Gotcha.
So, like my...
Or root. Like Beats by Dre.
No. Still like the vegetable.
Yeah. The root
vegetable.
Yes.
Anyway, so she's the... They call her the Black Widow of Texas. And, I mean, I guess, but you'll see. I don't know. We'll get there. In a while, we'll get there. Okay. So, here we go. Let's do this.
Is there more than one Black Widow of Texas?
Well, the thing is that they... call a Black Widow is like someone who kills like their spouses. Well, obviously a woman who kills spouses or family members. And so, yes.
I've never heard it about family members, but I've heard it about spouses.
Well, I just was reading up on it and because I was like, why do they call her Black Widow? Because yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
We'll just get there. Okay. So Betty Lou Devant was born on March 12th, 1937. In Roxborough, North Carolina. She was the second child born to parents Margaret and James Devant, who were sharecroppers on a tobacco farm. And from previous episodes, we know what a sharecropper is, so I'm not going to go there.
You said 1937?
1937.
So just in the middle of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Just before the Second World War.
Exactly.
Crazy.
Good history, Daph. Good job.
Yeah.
All right, so the family lived in a small pine cabin with no electricity, no running water, and no glass in the windows. They heated the home with a coal-burning stove, and with little to no money, they had no modern comforts, and so the family, like, suffered in many ways, you know? Like,
yeah.
Food, health, like, the whole nine, right?
That's sad.
It is sad. So when Betty was 5 years old, they moved to Danville, Virginia, where the parents found work at the cotton mills and they were able to have a little better life with more income. And they had milk and fresh foods instead of living just like on salt pork like they had before.
Salt pork?
Salt pork is like it's pork, but like it's cured in salt. So like it doesn't require refrigeration. Like you just have it. And like literally just sit on your counter and you could just eat it.
I've seen people do that online with like fish and stuff.
Yeah.
Just like a lot of like fuck ton of salt and like rub it around.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like it's salt, it's pork cured in salt. And like I said, it doesn't need refrigeration or anything.
Yeah, but you have to cook it, I believe.
Well, I think you have to cook it in the salt. Yeah. I knew you were going to fucking ask me, and I totally was going to look it up, but
no, I've seen it online. That's why I was thinking. I was trying to make that connection, if that's...
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. Recently on my For You page on TikTok has been a lot of, like, people cooking outdoors or in, like... Like, a lot of people in, like, rural areas of Asia cooking. It's been a lot of my For You page on TikTok recently.
That's weird. On TikTok?
In TikTok. On TikTok. And it's really cool to watch, like, how different it is than the way I cook. Inside on a stove.
Right.
No, or but it's just interesting.
The barbecue.
Yeah. And, like, the different types of foods.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting.
It is interesting.
That's why I was asking you, because, like, sparked that in my brain.
No,
I was like, I've seen this before.
Yeah. No, you're good. And like I said, it's something that doesn't require refrigeration. And obviously, like, it can't be good for you to eat it all the time because it's super salty, and eating lots of salt isn't good for you all the time, even though I really like salt. But anyway.
Right. Me too.
But not like on food, but like chips.
You know, I saw this really cool one day, which I would actually like to try. This is really cool looking. And then we can get back to the case.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, they had like a fish, and I love fish. Fish is like my favorite protein in the world. They had this fish, they like stuffed it right with whatever. Then they put it in like a parchment kind of paper. I think it was a parchment paper. Wrapped it in that, then wrapped it in aluminum, and then covered it in clay. They like made clay from like the shit outside, right? Like the clay.
Yeah.
Like shit outside.
Like clay from like the clay. Earth.
Yeah, but they made it into like a mud kind of clay,
mm-hmm.
and then rubbed it all on the outside of this aluminum, and then threw it in like some coal for a while,
mm-hmm.
and then like cracked open the clay, you know,
mm-hmm.
and ate the fish. And it looked like so cool.
I've heard of that. I've actually seen that before, because people cook like in clay pots. So this is just like curing the clay while you're cooking. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is really cool.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you know, you can't do anything with that clay after, because you have to break it. To get it, the fish out.
Right. Yeah. So you don't want to use like good expensive modeling clay.
No.
Just want to get some clay from the earth, as you said.
Yeah.
Make mud clay.
Yeah. Make mud clay.
Nice.
I don't know. I thought it was really cool.
It sounds really cool.
Okay. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good. So where was I? So
salt,
not living on salt pork. They have milk. They have fresh food. They got fruits. They got vegetables. Even though life was better and the health of the family had improved, Betty got measles and a series of ear infections, which caused some hearing loss. And once she was able to return to school, she struggled to hear the teachers and was forced to repeat the fourth grade as a result of her hearing loss, you know, not being able to hear very well. Yeah, it sucks.
I didn't know measles could hurt your ears.
Yeah, measles can wreak a lot of havoc on your body. So she was teased by her classmates that had moved up a grade, and she was called stupid because kids are cruel. At 12 years old, her mother was institutionalized with no prior symptoms. She started to randomly just all of a sudden have hallucinations. And it's what the doctors at that point in time called a psychotic break. And Betty was left to care for her two younger siblings, and her classmates made fun of her mother's condition and would fake seizures and act out odd behaviors. And obviously that made her feel more like crap about herself, you know?
Yeah.
And again, because kids still suck.
Yeah. They always have sucked. They'll continue to suck.
I mean, I'm not saying all kids suck, but, you know, kids are mean. Kids are...
No, they are. They at that age, at that point in your life, everyone as a kid sucks.
Yeah, they're mean.
They just, like, they takes time to develop that compassion and that empathy for others. And not everyone develops it, unfortunately, as, like, we talk about in these cases.
Right.
But, no, that's what I mean by, like, kids suck. But kids at that point in their lives don't realize, like, the heaviness until it's done on to them.
Right. Exactly. And sometimes kids do it because it's done to them.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll get off
that. Kids can be jerks.
Yeah, exactly. Betty hated her life, and she missed school because she had to stay home and take care of her family. And then her dad drank a ton. He like drank a ton because he was depressed over his wife. And Betty claimed that when her father drank, that he would beat her with the buckle end of a belt for just no reason at all, because he was just mean also.
So he was a mean drunk, an abusive drunk?
Apparently. July 18th, 1952, at just 15 years old, 1 month after finishing the ninth grade, Betty married Robert Franklin Branson. Robert was just 15 years old himself, and he worked in a zipper factory. Her mother had encouraged her to get married because she believed that Betty was pregnant, even though Betty said she was a virgin.
What the fuck?
Yeah, well, you know, her mom.
So they just, like, met each other, and then her mom's like, you're pregnant, you probably should marry him.
Well, they were probably dating, but it, like, didn't give me any real dating history. Just basically, you know, they were together and they got married. She's 15. Like, how long could they have been dating?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, she walked past him on the street one day, and her mom's like, he looked at you, you must be pregnant.
Probably.
So you must get married.
Pretty much.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, just didn't give any background on that. But so she's 15, he's 18, and her mom's like, hey, you guys better get married because Betty's pregnant. And she's like, no, I'm not, because I haven't even had sex, but whatever. They get married. 1 year later, they had their first daughter, Faye. And obviously, if it was a year later, she wasn't pregnant when they got married. But anyway, so they had their first daughter, Faye, when Betty was 16 years old. So 16, she's already, like, had to miss school. She's been held back. She gets fucked with by other kids, right? Her dad's a drunk.
Her mom's in and out of mental institutions. Is she in school at all anymore at this point?
No. No, because she finished the 9th grade and then she got married and then she got pregnant and she was a mother and she was a homemaker and she's 16 and she's like not happy, right?
Yeah.
So Robert got a better job thinking that more money would make Betty happier, but she still wasn't happy. She was only 16 and she wanted to be doing 16-year-old things, right?
Right.
The couple separated for 6 months. And
like going to the malt shop? Is that around this time?
Yes. Going to the malt shop. What did I say? 1952? Yeah. So, and like going to school dances, like being 16.
Right.
You know? So the couple separated for 6 months and Betty took Faye and went back to her parents' house. And that's where she lived. And she was so depressed that she attempted suicide by taking 2 bottles of aspirin. And her family reached out to Robert and let Robert know. And then the couple ended up reconciling. And then the following year, they had another baby, a baby girl, and her name was Connie. Robert found that he could make more money in construction in Texas. So the family who was living in Norfolk, Virginia at that time packed up and moved to Mesquite, Texas in 1955. Okay. So they've been married for 3 years. They got 2 kids, right?
They're babies still?
Yeah. The family, all of them are babies still.
Literally.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the parents are babies still. Betty and... what's his name? I'm sorry.
Robert. Yeah. So the family seemed to be thriving. In 1959, Shirley was born. And then in 1962, Phyllis. And then in 1964, Robbie. And then in 1966, Bobby. Which I'm like, okay, Robbie and Bobby.
Robbie and Bobby.
Okay. Yeah.
Bobbert and Robert.
Yep, exactly. So after 14 years of marriage and 6 kids, Betty grew bored and restless. Robert worked nights and Betty felt neglected and she started like hanging out in bars and stuff. And she's 5'2". She has blonde hair and she still has a perfect figure, even after giving birth to 6 kids. And she's only 29 years old at this point.
Right. So she's still very young.
Yeah. She's 29. She has 6 kids. Her husband works nights. She's like, fuck, man, I'm over this. Yeah.
My life sucks.
Uh-huh. She wanted to feel desirable and she wanted to be wanted. And she felt like obviously her husband wasn't feeling that anymore.
Yeah.
So she started leaving her older daughters to watch the younger children so she could go out and have a good time. I guess having the fun and freedom that she never had in her youth. Right. Because she gets married at 15.
Yeah. So her oldest is what, 13 at this point?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't math
Faye.
It.
Faye.
I mean,
if she's 29, she had her at 16.
Yeah.
She's 13.
Yeah. Good job, Beth.
13-year-old to watch 5 younger kids. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Yep. There you go. However, she's married and she has 6 kids. So that's kind of the life she chose. So.
Right.
Bummer for her that she's
bored.
Yeah. And
upset
over it. Yeah. But it is what it is.
She's a desperate housewife.
Pretty much. So Betty, who always kept a perfect house, started to let things fall into disarray. Not only her house, but also her family. And Robert, finally tired of the affairs and the partying and the overall collapse of the life that they had built together, demanded a divorce, which was final in 1969. And Robert, he was still good looking in his own right. He married a younger woman and he was ordered by the court to pay $350 a month in child support, but he didn't always pay.
Okay.
So Betty and her children's lives had drastically changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was married with a husband and now.
Yeah. And now she's not. So Faye.
It sounds like she fucked that up.
She fucked that up. So Faye followed in Betty's footsteps and she married at 15 years old. Betty sent 10-year-old Phyllis and 8-year-old Robbie to go live with their father. And Robbie asked his mother when she sent him away, when can I come home? And she replied, soon. But after that, she wouldn't see him for 5 years. And she would only see him for a couple minutes when she saw him.
Aww.
At that point in time. Yeah.
That's so sad.
He would end up moving back in with her when he was 18. But in that interim, there's little to no contact, right? So Connie left and she moved in with Faye and her husband. And so Connie's the second one.
Right.
Right. Shirley sometimes lived with Betty and sometimes she lived with friends. And Bobby, who at the time was 3 years old, was the only child that Betty refused to part with.
Aw.
So Betty, in spite of, and that would suck too. Like you have 6 kids and you're like, okay, everybody else can go, but I want this one.
Right. Like, suck for the other kids.
Yeah, it's sad. So Betty, in spite of stressing over how she was going to pay her bills, she was always keeping up with the latest fashion and she always looked her best. She put a blonde hairpiece in her hair and she put on full makeup every day. And she, like I said, she was only 5'2" and she wore 4-inch high heels to make herself appear taller. And she wore short skirts, which were in style at the time. Still probably in style. I don't know. I'm not a short skirt wearer, but... she turned heads everywhere she went. Like she's
right.
A good looking.
She was a bombshell.
Yeah, she's a good looking. She's a bombshell. Perfect. Perfect words. I like it.
Blonde bombshell.
A blonde bombshell. So Betty met Billy York Lane about a year after her divorce. He was a house painter and they both had birthdays in March. Billy was 7 years older than Betty. And after only a few months of dating, the couple decided to marry. She told her children, "Bill is so nice to me." This is a quote. "Bill is so nice to me. He's real gentle and kind. I know you're just going to love him." And they married on July 28th, 1970.
So she hadn't introduced them to the kids before?
No. Because they're
Jeez. I know. Well, that they're all over the place. Uh-huh. They're scattered.
Uh-huh.
But geez.
But geez is right.
Okay.
You're like, oh, alrighty then.
I just like, oh, so you wouldn't introduce your new husband to your children?
Before you marry him?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, I guess we see it a lot.
The details. It's cool.
Yeah. You're just going to love him.
Trust me.
I feel like that's not going to happen.
The courtship between the two was so short that Betty didn't have time to see all of Billy's controlling ways in his hot temper. So Betty's now 33 years old and she's not loving her figure at this point. It's not easy to keep up a trim, curvaceous figure the older you get. And she's had 6 kids and she's 33. So she starts taking the diet drug. It's called Dexatrim. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it was an over-the-counter diet pill that you could get over-the-counter. Like you just go to Walgreens or Rite Aid or
CVS,
wherever.
How could you forget about CVS?
Wherever you want to go to buy your Dexatrim.
I would buy it at CVS.
Alrighty. That's great.
I have a creepy CVS obsession.
You do.
It's funny though,
only when we go on vacation and we have them here and you're not like into it that much, but that's fine. Anyway, so she started taking Dexatrim, which is a diet drug, and she continued to drink, which also will help you put on weight. It's not the best thing for weight loss.
Right.
But Betty was determined to lose weight quickly and she took more of the drug than the recommended dose, which did not help her lose weight faster. It just made her irritable, restless, caused insomnia and headaches. Beside the side effects of the high dose of Dextrim, cannot stock today.
Her kids say words aren't really working out for you today.
No. As her kids would explain it later, it was like she became 2 different people. She would flip out over nothing and scream at the kids and use foul language, which she wasn't really known to use foul language. At the same time.
So she was gentle before this.
Yeah, or maybe not gentle, but just not like... She wasn't a cusser. I'm assuming that if you're having affairs, hanging out at bars, and being willing to give up your kids and only keep one of them, that you might not be the most gentle human being. My bad. I'm just going out on
I was saying that. I was saying gentle because I feel like these women at this point, like, I mean, I'm sure I'm trying to think of it. Like, you see it in movies, right? Like this persona that you're describing. But, like, the woman who steps out, like, she is gentle at home. She just is shady behind everyone's back. Does that make sense?
Yeah. 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 It makes sense.
Like, she's not abrasive.
Not an abrasive personality.
Yeah.
Right. Gotcha.
But this made her abrasive. Okay.
Yeah. Because, you
know. Dexatrim.
Dexatrim. Exactly.
I don't manufacture this anymore.
Nope. And I took it.
You took it?
Mm-hmm.
How old were you?
Like, I don't know, an older teenager.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did it make you irritable?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it did. Everything makes me irritable. No, I'm just kidding. I know,
basically.
Yeah, I can't remember, but I don't know when it came off the market, but it had to be like in the 90s probably that it came off the market.
They discovered it was no longer FDA approved.
Right. It wasn't really actually good for you.
Weird.
Weird.
Same with smoking.
Weird. At the same time, just a few days after her wedding to Billy, he began slapping her around. And over the next few months, his abusive behavior got worse and he began punching her and beating her. And this happened on a regular basis. Her kids said that they were horrified to see her covered in bruises all the time. And Billy, knowing how much Betty always liked to look her best, hit her in the face and enjoyed watching her try to cover her bruises with makeup, which, along with the swelling, were pretty much impossible to hide, right? So he's just
This guy sounds like a dick.
Yeah, he's a douche canoe. Yeah. He's a dick.
He sounds like a fucking asshole. Yeah. Sounds like you may have fucked up with leaving Robert.
You done fucked up.
Or I guess Robert left her, but...
Well, yeah.
Nonetheless, you fucked up.
Yeah. On October 28th, 1970, Betty took out her straining...
Becky who?
Yes, someone totally different. But also Betty took out her restraining order on Billy. And then 2 months later, she divorced him. But the couple still continued their love-hate relationship after the divorce and with the restraining order still in place.
Nice.
Right? So Billy...
So they'd just get together, sleep together, and then he'd hit her and she'd be like, I fucking hate you.
Sounds like it, yeah. So Billy would watch her coming and going from work, sitting like a half a block from her house with the lights, sitting in his car with his lights out, and she would just see him, you know? Yeah. And other times he would follow her around while she was driving. In May of 1971, Betty wound up in the emergency room with a broken nose, and she complained to the doctor that she didn't know what was wrong with her. But instead of telling Betty to leave Billy or calling the police and filing a police report regarding the abuse, which he could have done because she was there.
He's abused, a doctor.
Yeah, and he could have called the cops. He just prescribed her antidepressants.
Nice.
Yeah, well, fix you, because it's not him, it's you.
Well, that makes sense, I suppose, right? This is like the same era that...
1971.
I was going to say, like, maybe it was a little predated this, but like the Sid and Nancy kind of era. The Nancy that they like put her on all those drugs.
Just drugs.
Instead of getting to the bottom of what was going on.
Yeah. Or, like I said, we'll fix her. She's getting the shit kicked out of her. We'll fix her.
Right. You know? It's a man's world.
Yeah, exactly. A few months later, Betty was in the ER again after Billy punched her and opened a gash over her eye that required several stitches.
Ow.
In spite of all of this, they continue to hang out in the same clubs where they had first met, getting jealous when one or the other of them danced or talked to someone else, both of them acting vengeful and using other men and women to really just piss each other off, right?
Fucking toxicity at its worst.
Yeah, it's pretty...
At its finest, I guess I should say, toxicity at its finest.
Either way, at its worst, at its best, however you want to shake it out.
Yeah.
They're just like hanging out in the same places, like, you know, oh, I'm going to dance with this guy. Look at me. Look at me. Oh, I'm going to make out with this chick. Look at me. Look at me. Like just
trying to piss each other off.
Yeah, pretty much. Or not pretty much, but yeah, that's what's happening.
Yeah, they're trying to anger each other.
Yes.
And then all that ends up is her getting hit.
Yeah. Good and that call. Ends up with them sleeping together and then her getting beaten up. And
yeah. Yeah. It's a good call, Betty.
It's a vicious cycle.
Fuck you, Billy.
On January 17th, 1972, Billy went up to Betty after she had danced with a man he had previously told her to stay away from. And he told her to go home or he'd kill her. And she left while driving. And while she's driving, she flags down a police officer and she tells him that her ex-husband is following her. And she gave a description of his car. And she told the officer that she was heading home. And the officer told her he'd keep an eye out for the car and keep an eye on her apartment as well. So about 1:45 in the morning, the Dallas County Sheriff received an emergency call from Betty's apartment. When deputies arrived, they found a man laying in a pool of his own blood and unconscious outside the back door of the apartment, and he had been shot. Deputies who were ready to arrest Betty when asked what happened, and Betty told them that it was her ex-husband, Billy Lane, and that he had flown into a jealous rage over her dancing with another man. And she told the officers how he had told her to leave the bar or he'd kill her. And they asked if he'd ever threatened her before, to which she just reported that, or responded that he had once with a gun. She's like neglected to mention the other times that she's like wound up in the emergency room and stuff, right?
Right.
Just this one time. And Betty said that she knew enough about Billy to take him seriously and go home when he threatened to kill her if he saw, because he saw her with this other man, right?
So right.
She's like, I know enough. I got to freaking scoot out
of here. I got to get out of here because he's hurt me before.
Right. He's crazy.
He'll put me... He'll end me this time.
Yeah, he will kill me. So when she got home, she said her daughter, Connie, told her that Billy had been calling over and over. And Betty told the officers that Billy called after she got home and she had answered the phone. And he told her that he was coming over to kill her. So Betty went to her bedroom and grabbed a .22 pistol that she always kept loaded. And she laid the gun down on the bar by the door. So I'm guessing bar, like a counter or whatever, right?
Yeah. Wait, okay, so Connie's home at this point?
Connie's home at this
point. Her daughter, second oldest.
Second oldest.
Faye's oldest.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just had a thought for you, which you might dive into this, but this is, might be thinking ahead. I don't know. Let me just spit it out.
Do it.
How she flagged that cop and said, hey, I'm afraid. He's going to get me. It almost sounds a little premeditated to me.
I'm getting there.
I figured as much, but I just had to throw that out there.
Yeah, you did. You did. You did have to throw that out there.
So I feel like everybody's brains are going to be turning as they're listening to
turning,
it.
Turning, twirling, spinning batons with flames.
Yeah, I just had to say that because I caught on to it.
Okay.
Sometimes I don't always, and sometimes I go, oh, fuck.
Hey, that's but a light bulb moment.
This is a time I had a light bulb.
This is a one time?
This is the one time I had a light bulb. The one and only time I've ever had a light bulb.
No, you have lots of light bulbs. You're a smart cookie. She laid the gun down on the bar by the door. So again, like I said, probably like a race counter or whatever. About 10 minutes later, she heard knocking at the back door and she screamed for Connie to call the police while Billy yelled to open the door or I'll break it down. She let him in and he backed her into a corner and told her that he got crazy when he saw her dancing with other men or just with other men in general. And then Betty reached behind her and grabbed the gun. And she said he didn't act afraid. Maybe he thought I was bluffing, she said. He wouldn't back off, so I fired the gun at him. She couldn't remember how many times she fired, but she kept firing until she saw him stagger out the back door. Deputies then read Betty her rights and took her into custody. She waived her right to an attorney and gave an official statement that she'd shot Billy Lane. Officers questioned why, if he was coming at her, did he have two bullet holes in his back? Isn't that weird? Yeah, she had no answer for the question. So they charged her with assault with intention to commit murder with malice. Police questioned Connie, who told them that she'd been listening on the extension when Billy called, and he told Betty he was coming over to kill her, and her kids would be put into the juvenile system. And so, you know, this Connie's listening.
Connie's version of events.
Right, because she's listening on the extension. And Betty told, so Connie then said that she called the operator and told the operator to call the police and bring him to the house. And then Betty told Connie to get out of the house as she yelled for Billy to leave. Then she heard some shots and she ran into the kitchen and she saw Billy on the ground by the porch.
Right, she saw her stepdad down.
Yes. Stepdad down. So then the police questioned Billy's daughter, Barbara, who told them that she too had listened on the extension and that Betty had been the one to call Billy. And she was crying and she asked him to come over and get his things. And Billy had asked Betty how many times she was going to shoot him. And he said none. And he asked then how many police officers would be there when he got there. Because remember, she has a restraining order against him.
Yeah.
And she said none. And then Barbara said, Dad wanted to meet her at a different location, but she wouldn't do it. He left the house at like 1:10 a.m. and he told me that he'd be back in 30 minutes. And Barbara said that she'd begged him not to go. Billy had to have surgery to remove the two bullets, and he was in,
so he lived.
He did live.
Okay.
And he was in critical condition. When Billy was strong enough a week later to give his statement, he told police that Betty had called him and asked him to come over and talk. And he said it was late and he wanted to talk in the morning. And she basically said, it's now or never. Like, you come now or, like, we're never going to talk. And because they have this crazy ass fucking relationship,
this roller coaster,
right, he's like, well, I better go. Except for, you know, they would have talked anyway, but whatever, because it's now or never. But just kidding, it'll be some other time. Well,
his daughter's there,
right?
So obviously they would have had to talk at some point,
right? Well, no, his daughter's at his house.
Oh,
because she was listening. Oh, remember, she said that Betty called him.
Yeah.
So he has his daughter.
So both the daughters are listening on the extension, or supposedly.
Yeah.
I was thinking that they were living together. Like, she had his kid.
No. No. Okay. He's at his house with his kid, and she's at her house with one of... Well, she has Bobby, so she has two kids, I guess, right? Okay.
Connie and Bobby, yep.
Yep. So he got in his car, and he went over there, and when he got there, the back door... when he got to the back door of her apartment, everything was dark. And he told her to open the door, and then she told him to leave. And he guessed that she had changed her mind about talking. The next thing I know, she's holding a gun on me. So I start to leave, and she starts firing. He said I could still move, but she fired again. And that's when he lost consciousness. And he remembered her saying, if you move again, I'll shoot. So
it's a pretty volatile relationship.
A little bit.
So it's a little bit fuckery.
A little bit of fuckery. Billy spent 3 weeks in the hospital and then several weeks in physical therapy after that. One of the bullets had severely damaged a nerve leading to his right leg, and he was unable to walk. After Parkland physical therapy released him, Betty went right back to him.
Of course they did.
Right. One of Billy's neighbors told authorities, quote, I like Billy, but he's jealous of Betty because she's so beautiful. I know Betty loves him. You should have seen those two. After he got out of the hospital, his right leg was no good. He had to learn to walk all over again. And Betty spent long hours helping him. She'd get him up on his feet and they'd put their arms around each other and they'd go back and forth on the sidewalk. Quite a thing to watch. She loved that man. You could tell by the way she'd spend the time with him, just walking him up and down the street. So okay. That's what one of the neighbors said.
Weird.
After all that was said and done, when they went to court, Billy told the court that he was willing to sign an affidavit saying that he had threatened Betty, and without the plaintiff to press charges, the court had no option but to drop the attempted murder charge against her, and she was charged with misdemeanor assault.
Oh, my God!
Right? Like, you shoot someone. So what,
she's going to get a ticket?
In the court, Betty pleaded guilty, and Billy paid her $150 fine.
Jeez.
And she was even able to convince the judge to give her her gun back.
I feel like...
Did you hear the last part?
Yeah, to give the gun back. I did hear that.
And he paid the fine.
Yeah. I feel like... No. This is what I was going to say. I feel like it's such, like, a fucking corrupt missed opportunity on the justice system. Like, every time shit like this happens, she's in the hospital because he beat her up, fixed the woman. Instead of, like, okay, now they're divorced, there's a restraining order. Like, I realize, like, there's not going to be cops at everyone's every move. But at this point, like, they might have actually wanted to do some kind of a protection for Billy.
Right.
After, or even for Betty in the previous instances, because they're divorced, like, she's coming in there beat up.
Right. But this is pre OJ Simpson, which after OJ Simpson, all that shit changed.
Like, yes and no.
Well, okay. But like, but in the 70s, and I don't know about in Texas, but in the 70s, like, if like you beat each other up, nobody wants to press charges. Okay, cool. Go on about your business. But like after all the OJ Simpson stuff happened, like if someone was beat up by another person, like in a domestic violence situation, even if the person doesn't want to press charges against the other one, if there's signs of physical violence, the state can press charges.
Right.
So that has changed.
No, I know. But that's what I'm saying is that like they're divorced, right? Obviously happened for a reason. Like, who in their fucking right minds, after her going to the hospital, after him being shot, is letting them, like, continue to come back together?
Right. Well, because they don't have any control over it, and they're fucking crazy. And obviously, they got married after just a couple months of dating. Like, they don't know each other.
Right.
You know? And then they get divorced after only a couple months of marriage.
Yeah.
Right? And then this crazy...
Is that technically a divorce or an annulment?
They got divorced.
Okay.
So not an annulment, no.
Gotcha.
Got it. Gotcha. So then a month after that, right? So after they get out of court and he pays her fine and she gets her gun back and all that, Betty and Billy got married again.
Of course they did.
Right?
That's, I could just see it coming a mile away. That's why I said to you, who in their right minds is letting this happen?
Right. And people speculated that Betty just promised to marry Billy again if he'd help her with a plea reduction.
Oh, my God.
So there you go. Their second marriage lasted only a month.
Shocker.
And then Betty packed up Bobby and she moved to Little Rock, Arkansas.
These are two pretty hot and bothered people. So
a little bit.
Not surprised.
Right. Once in Little Rock, it didn't take Betty long to meet a man named Ronnie Threckled. Threckled? Threckled? We're going to go with that. I'm not going to say it more than once Threckled? Or twice. Threckled.
Threckled.
Yes. The pair Threckled. Met. The pair met at a country western bar, you know, like the kind of bar that has saddles.
Saloon doors?
No, it has saddles bolted on metal poles for bar stools.
Uh-huh.
Like that kind of a place. Maybe yeah. It has swinging saloon doors. Did you say salon?
I said saloon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it has the salon doors.
Salon doors.
We're going to the salon today.
Let's do it.
No, saloon.
Okay. Ronnie was an automotive parts salesman, and he asked Betty if she was single, to which she replied that she was divorced and that she had a 3-year-old son. And I guess she spaced out about those other five kids she has.
The rest of them.
Ronnie told Betty that he was divorced, but that he didn't have any kids. And after a night of dancing and sipping drinks, the pair walked out together. And after more flirting, Ronnie bent down and he kissed Betty. And she wrapped her...
Oh, shit. I thought you were about to say got down on one knee. I'm like, after only one night? Like, she's like really...
Amazing?
Not the word I was going to use. She's like really... What's the... Like, decreasing in time.
like the giggling granny.
Yeah, like 5 minutes later. Oh, shit. Okay. Yes. Fuck it. Let's do it. We've known each other for the last, I'm pretty sure the hand was still on the one, but it's cool.
It's whatever. So he bent down and he kissed her, and then she wrapped her arms around his neck and she kissed him again. And she asked Ronnie if he would like to come home with her. But she didn't want him to think that she was, quote, a fast woman.
Oh, of course not.
Right. So Ronnie accepted the offer. And after the very first night, he began living with Betty.
What did I just say?
Yep. Well, I wasn't going to be like, oh, my God, just wait for it. But yeah, just wait.
Yeah, just wait for it.
So
what did I just say? Was she friends with the giggling granny?
I don't know.
Did they know each other?
Maybe. I don't know.
They're both in southern states.
There you go. This was November of 1973, and Ronnie was 3 years younger than Betty. He was 33, and she was 36. Over the next 4 years, the couple would have good times, and they would have bad times. They would have heated arguments, and Ronnie would get rough with Betty, and she would slash his tires.
Nice. That's a tit for tat.
Exactly, like all four of his tires.
All so, four of them.
All wow. four of them. On... Occasion she or on one occasion she even tried to hit him with a tire iron.
Okay. So, yeah, they're and how long have they been together for at this point?
4 years.
Oh, 4 years. Okay. Well, that's I don't know if that's better or worse. That like at least they're keeping up the games, like when Billy called it quits.
Right.
Billy's like, okay, I'm tapped.
No, I gotta go. Well, no, she was tapped. She's like, I realize I've shot you, and cool, thanks for not saying that it was my fault that I tried to kill you and you let me off and paid my fine and got me my gun back.
And so we got married again.
But peace.
Right. I'm actually out now.
I'm actually going to leave now.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're together for 4 years. And like I said, the relationship's up and down and, you know, it's more down than up. And
yeah, it's been another roller coaster for Betty.
Sounds like it. Yes.
Yeah.
According to Ronnie, Betty was very contradictory and she puzzled him. She would complain about people taking advantage of her and always wanting something from her, even her own children. And about a month after...
Oh, wait. Okay. At this point, does he know about the four? Or the other five? I'm sorry, the other five?
I think he must because it's been 4 years. Yeah. And she's talking about like her kids and stuff. And so they have this particular conversation where she was like so upset with her kids and like how they try to take advantage of her, blah, blah, blah. And so like... After this conversation, which is like about a month previous or whatever, Yeah. Betty told Ronnie that she wanted to move back to Dallas to be closer to her children because she really missed them. So Betty was always all over the place, and she would say one thing and then she would change her mind and then she would deny what she said earlier. Ronnie did, however, say that he thought that she was a good mother because she always so showed so much patience with Bobby and she worshiped the ground he walked on.
So she's got that going for her.
Right. In spite of her crazy ups and downs, Ronnie wanted to be with Betty. He had always lived in Little Rock and his entire family was there and all of his friends and his life. Like, everything is in Little Rock for this
everything
guy,
he's
right?
ever known.
But he made the decision to move to Dallas with Betty. He figured that he could be an automotive sales parts salesperson anywhere that he went, which is yeah. fair. So the couple married in February of 1978. So remember, they met like what I said, November of 1973.
Something like that. She was 36 and he was 33.
Right. So they get married in February of 1978. And not long after the wedding, and they're in Dallas, right? So not long after the wedding, Ronnie started to feel tied down. Like, okay.
Wait. I'm confused. You said they were together for 4 years.
Yeah. But then they went to Dallas.
After the 4 years of being together in Little Rock?
Yeah.
So they got married after 6 years of being together.
Well, yeah. But like... Yeah, after 4 years of being in a relationship together and the ups and downs and the blah, 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 then they get married. But they got married in February of 1978. They met in November of 1973. So it's like just slightly over 5 years.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So not long after the wedding, Ronnie started feeling tied down. You know, which one does when you're married?
Yeah.
Because you're in a relationship.
Right.
Kind of permanent-ish.
Yeah, permanent-ish.
Depends.
Semi-permanent.
Yeah, depends on how you, how you consider marriage to be.
Right.
He felt like he needed to sow his wild oats, and he went out drinking and shooting pool with his new friends while Betty stayed home taking care of Bobby. And obviously, you know, this isn't going to go over real super well with Betty.
Yeah.
She's a little cray-cray.
Just a little. Just a touch of cray.
Just a touch of cray. And Betty, with her need to keep herself trim and attractive, began taking more and more Dexatrim. And this made her already erratic behavior much worse. And Bobby, who was 12 by this point in time, once told a friend, one moment we get along fine, and the next she's a different person. It was like she got hateful all of a sudden, and... I mean, all of a sudden, like, snap, right? And so, and that was the end of his quote. Her moods pretty much just were, like, off and on.
So this 12-year-old is saying she is flipping her personality?
Yeah, like, she's pretty much like a light switch, right?
Yeah.
So off and on with no warning, just, like, fine and not fine.
Right.
And when Bobby asked her about her mood swings when she was in a, quote, normal state, she wouldn't remember acting terrible at all. It was like two different people lived inside of Betty. And this happened whether she'd been drinking or not drinking. And they said that her voice even changed and she would say fuck and cuss up a storm.
It's all the Dexatrim.
And Betty was not known to use that kind of language. The kids knew that their grandmother had been in and out of mental institutions, and they hoped that their mother hadn't inherited any of those mental issues.
I forgot about that.
Moving to Dallas gave Ronnie a chance to see Betty with her girls, and he was surprised how easily annoyed she became with them. She was always complaining about them getting into trouble and coming to her for money to help them out. And she seemed to consider her girls competition. She became jealous when they were around Ronnie and even accused Ronnie of sleeping with them.
What the fuck? Is Faye still married?
Faye's still married. One night, as Ronnie sat at the kitchen table having a drink, one of the girls sauntered, into the kitchen wearing just a robe. Whether she was trying to tease Ronnie or just really piss Betty off, we don't really know.
What the fuck?
And it doesn't say which girl it was, but I kind of want to assume that it's Connie, but I could be wrong. She stood there making conversation while slowly untying the waist on her robe. And then the robe just dropped to the floor. And of course, right at that moment, Betty came in to see her daughter standing completely naked in front of her husband.
Right, in front of her. Newish husband.
Right.
Newish. I say. Because they've been together for a while. They just got married.
They just got married. So Betty...
They had a normal relationship-ish.
Ish. Relationship-ish.
Relationship-ish.
Normal.
Normal-ish.
Normal-ish.
Well, I say normal-ish because I feel like it's normal that, you know, you get to know someone over time. Not normal necessarily the next day after you meet, you're living together. But a more normal in the fact that, like... You get married, and then you're married for 2 months, and then you get divorced. And then
some shit happens, but you keep seeing each other and then you get back together only to get shot and then get back married and then divorced again. And then you leave. More normal than that.
Maybe.
I mean, what could be more normal than that, Daph?
Normalish.
Normalish.
What could be more normal than that?
I just Daphne? Don't really have any other description than normal.
Hashtag goals.
Hashtag normal goals. Hashtag normal is boring.
Yeah.
So let
yeah.
me guess. Billy's coming back. Well, there's no normal is boring.
There are no books written about normal people.
That's true. That's true. Joe Schmo doesn't have his own book.
Nope, he does not. Of course, right at that moment, Betty... Oh, I already said that she came in to see him, right, standing yeah, completely naked.
As one of the daughters, perhaps it's Connie, has her robe on the floor and she's butt-ass naked in front of her new husband. And she's like, oh, what are you doing like that, Connie? That's Ronnie. Connie, stop being weird in front of Ronnie. Ronnie, that's Connie.
That's exactly how it went down. It's like you were there.
I was there. I forgot to tell you. It was Connie.
It was Connie. My bad. I didn't. It just is one of the daughters, but I'm guessing that you know for real.
Allegedly.
Betty screamed and said that she knew that something was going on between him and her girls, and Ronnie tried to defend himself, but Betty was going on, or she was going off, and she was going on, and she didn't even hear him, right? So,
yeah.
Her daughter grabbed the robe, covered herself, and ran out of the kitchen, which is probably a good move.
Right.
And Betty told Ronnie to get out. And the next day, Ronnie packed up his things. And while he was trying to figure out how to arrange everything in his car so it would fit, right? So he could just take everything all in one fell swoop and go.
Wanted him to get shot like Billy?
I don't know.
Is that the tactic all along?
I don't know. I think it sounds like they're all kind of messed up is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
But I'm,
yeah. Okay, sorry.
A young mother who, you know, cheats and goes out and then dips and then has this crazy tumultuous relationship and then another crazy tumultuous relationship. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you probably are a little bit
fucked up.
Maybe. You know, people who come out of that normal are lucky, I think. But anyway, so he's like trying to figure out how to get everything in his car so he can just go and like not come back, you know?
Right.
He heard the sound while he's like trying to sort everything out in his car. He hears the sound of an engine coming closer and he looked up and he saw Betty's car coming right at him.
Ooh.
And so he ran in between two cars as Betty swerved past him, spraying him with gravel from the road as she did. And then Ronnie just got in his car and he left.
Good call,
Ronnie. Yeah, he's like, ooh, without getting shot. And like, we don't, like, at this point, we don't know if he knew that she had shot her previous husband. I'm going to assume that she probably didn't say that.
Probably didn't come up in conversation. Right?
Well, since she didn't even say that, like, she had five other kids for a while, I'm prior. Sure, like, she didn't, wasn't yeah. like, oh, yeah, I have six kids and I shot my ex-husband twice.
My twice ex-husband.
Twice. I shot him twice, twice married, twice.
Yeah, we were twice married and I shot him twice. Just because that's casual conversation starter.
Right.
Casual topics.
It's whatever.
It's cool.
In August of 1979, Betty, feeling good and feeling good about herself again, went to Charlie's Angels Bar and she watched a woman dance and strip on the stage and she thought, I could do that.
Oh, fuck. So now she's entering a new phase of her life as yes. a stripper.
Well, she grabbed her drink and she
or went an exotic dancer, if you will.
Well, whatever.
I don't really care. They make great money.
Right. They can. They can also not. But Betty grabbed her drink and she went to find the manager. And the manager told her that she couldn't just show up and go to work, that she needed an audition. And so the manager asked her how old she was, and she said 32, which she could pass for, but at this point in time, she's 42.
Right.
But lucky Betty, she can pass for 32 at 42, which...
Hey, you do like fucking 10, 12 years off of yourself a lot of the time, sometimes even 20, when people say, you're not really that old.
Yeah, but I don't lie.
No, you don't lie about it. You just don't volunteer the information.
I don't.
And then they say, oh, let me guess. I think you're... And then you go, nope, I'm... And then they go, really? So you got it going on, too.
Right. Thank you.
I so mean, it's not right? Just, yeah. right? So it's yeah. not just like, oh, my God, how lucky. And then I'm... Fuck. I don't know if I shared this moment on the podcast ever, But one day I went to a liquor store. I didn't get carded. I was of age, right? But I didn't get carded. And then our mailman came and he was like, oh, I need to see your ID to sign for this package. Make sure you're over 18. I was like, I don't know if I should be really insulted and offended right now or if I should feel terribly blessed and grateful because I didn't get carded at the liquor store, but I just got carded trying to grab a package at my own house.
Okay.
All right.
So I guess it pays to look young.
It does pay to look young, except for when you are young and then you're like, oh, I'm older. But then when you're older and people think you're young, you're like, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like all you and all your friends. They'd always be like, oh, I'm older than you, Daphne. I'm older. And you'd be like, I mean, God, I hate she's older than me. And I'd be like, one day you're going to be happy she's older than you. One day she's not going to be like, oh, my God, I'm older than you. And she's going to be like, oh, I'm older than you.
Right. Shout out to my Kennedy, who told me by the time she was driving, I'd be like 90. And she's driving now. And I'm not like 90. So I probably could pass to look about the same age as you.
Yes. Don't disagree. Don't disagree at all.
Kennedy.
So anyway, so she's 42, says she's 32, looks hot, apparently. So on Thursday, August 27th, 1979, Betty shows up at Charlie's Angels Bar for her audition. And she went in a little bit early so she could learn from the professional dancers. An experienced stripper named Candy.
Okay.
Candy gave Betty some pointers. Candy told Betty to shave everywhere. And she'd be back to show her how to apply the pasties. And she chose the stage name Sexy Tiger, which was derived from her CB handle, which was Tiger.
What's CB?
Like a CB radio. Because she used to, like, I didn't, like, talk about this part, but, like, she used to, like, talk to truckers and, like, she talked to...
What's a CB radio?
It's, like, instead of cell phones. But...
Is it like a walkie-talkie?
Yes, it's a walkie-talkie-ish. But people had them in their cars. People, like truck drivers, used them, like, and cops used them and stuff. And oh, so
that's
truckers
what that is.
Communicate. Remember that movie, Rear View or whatever?
No.
With, what's his name? With the guy that got killed from the Fast and the Furious, Paul.
Oh, Paul Walker.
Paul Walker. And he's in that movie, Rear View or whatever, and they start fucking with this truck driver while they're driving.
I've never seen that movie.
Oh my God, it's great. Anyway, so, but yeah, they're on a CB radio. But anyway, so she...
Right, Paul Walker? That's
yes,
his name.
Yes, Paul Walker.
Right?
Yes, that's his name.
Okay.
But I couldn't... I didn't go into the whole thing about, like, her having a CB handle and, like, flirting with guys and stuff and, like...
Okay, so she's always been a little promiscuous.
A little flirty.
Yeah.
So her CB handle was Tiger, and so she chose the stage name Sexy Tiger. Once on stage, the crowd started chanting, take it off, take it off. And she struggled.
Take it off.
And she struggled.
Everybody, take it off.
Not everybody, just Betty. She struggled to loosen the tie of the...
Woo, Sexy Tiger.
of the string bikini that she was wearing. Daphne, get out of the litter box.
Like, I don't know if you can actually hear me purr. I guess we'll find out. So I got right up on the mic to do that.
Right up on it. So she's struggling with the tie of the string bikini that she's wearing to, like, take it off, right? And she didn't want to look like an amateur. So she...
Amateurdle.
On his knee. Yeah. So as she's struggling with the string and she's trying to keep in time with the music and, you know, trying to look all like she's
sexy her tiger,
first, her sexy tiger, not the first time on stage here. So she finally jerks the top off and one of the pasties comes off with it and she didn't notice. And then the crowd goes into hysterics and she can't understand why they're laughing at her. And then she looked down to see the sparkle of silver sequins on the stage next to her. And she didn't want to look embarrassed like some inexperienced teenager. So she danced her way towards...
I don't know that she has a fear of looking like a teenager.
Oh, embarrassed, like inexperienced teenager, not like actually like an age.
I know, okay. But I'm just saying.
Just going out on a limb there. So she dances her way towards the pasty and she picks it up and she walks up to the microphone, and in her sexiest, sultriest voice, she asked if some nice gentleman would like to help her put it back on. And seven men rushed the stage. One man, who's half drunk, trying to help her, basically just fumbling around with her boob, as the audience, like, screams with laughter, right? And then another man, who's dressed in a black suit, pushed the drunk man out of the way, and he opened his wallet to expose a badge that says Dallas Police Vice Squad. And Betty was arrested and charged with public lewdness.
So she had to keep the pasty on.
You have to keep the pasty on, and you can't be getting fondled on stage in public.
Yeah, so she lost that job on her first night.
Yeah, she didn't get that job. Gotcha. So she was ordered to pay a $250 fine, and she was sentenced to 30 days in jail, and she was put on probation for 1 year.
Oh, geez.
And Betty, who's not one to stay single for very long, put her man feeling finders out.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to leave it for today.
Ooh, okay.
So, because then
it gets crazy.
Yeah, shit's gonna get real fucking crazy.
I know. My mom's been talking about this one for like 4 months.
Ugh, that makes it sound so bad.
Well, you have.
Because it's not
four
months of work, but some other shit in the interim.
Yeah, no, because you just keep getting rabbit holed on this case. No, I really like it so far.
Do you?
Sexy Tiger.
So, like I said, I'm trying to not make it three parts, but like this is like the buildup to real crazy.
I mean, this is still pretty crazy.
This is like the pre-crazy.
It sounds like she had a hard life and then like a hard upbringing and then like tried to make the most out of it with her marriage to Robert and then was bored and unhappy and really fumbled that and then just hasn't really been able to get it back since.
Right. And I feel like she's super insecure.
Yeah.
And she just, like, needs to have a man. Like, she needs a man to make her feel validated. Like, she
can't. Man to make her feel whole.
Yes. She can't just be Betty without being Betty and someone else.
Yeah.
So she's got to be Betty and Robert, Betty and Billy, Betty and Ronnie, and Betty and whoever were the.
Right.
The in-betweens that are not mentioned because they're probably just insignificant to the right. story. Right.
They're just one-night standers.
Fluff.
Or, yeah.
Fluff and filler.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously she had affairs, so there's way more.
Yeah.
She had affairs while she was married to Robert.
Right. So, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I really like it.
I do hope you like it, because I feel like you're, like, we're looking bored, but.
No, my neck just really hurts.
Okay. So, like I said, this is, like, appetizer to pre-crazy. This is the pre.
These are the hors d'oeuvres.
Right. These are the crazy hors d'oeuvres for the.
This is the Texas caviar before we get to the chuck roast.
Right. Yeah. Because shit will get real.
Before we get to the 5-star tin smoked barbecue food.
Shit has already gotten real, but shit's going to get more real.
This is the potato salad.
Yes, this is the potato salad.
I love potato salad. I hate that I just said that. Because guess who's not going to make me potato salad?
Me.
Yeah,
because you owe me my Hawaiian macaroni salad, which I was told that you were going to make on Thursday.
Yeah, well, when's the last time Saturday, I made that for you?
A long time ago, this summer.
September. When's the last time you made me potato salad?
This summer.
You did not make me potato salad this summer. You made potato salad maybe summer of 2013.
Okay, whatever. I'll make potato salad, but you have to make Hawaiian macaroni salad first.
Happily.
Oh, yay.
Not that hard to make. Potato salad? That takes time and work.
Potato salad's not that much effort either. It's just more cubing, cutting, more cutting and cubing.
More cubing, cutting, cubing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should probably wrap it up.
You think?
Yeah, probably. You can find us on Instagram at That's Disturbing Podcast. Maybe hashtag sexy tiger us for there. Meow. Rare. Daphne, quit scratching the couch. You can send us a Gmail with what you want us to cover on podcast. That's a certain podcast at gmail.com. Or you can send it to us on a DM or a comment or whatever, also on our Instagram. And that's all we got for you. Happy football season.
Okay.
Well, we're in the playoffs.
We are not in the playoffs, but the playoffs are happening.
We're personally the Broncos. Us personally, we're out of the Broncos.
Daphne and I are not playing in the playoffs, nor are the Broncos playing in the playoffs.
No, we're not playing in the playoffs. All right. Well, that's all we got.
Peace out, sexy tigers.
Peace out, sexy tigers.
Y'all come back now, you hear?